Since Sharon Weaver was unable to come today, our speaker today will be our own Dr. Jill Austin. Jill teaches courses in leadership, ethics, and nonprofit management at MTSU. She is a past chair of UUFM and the current worship committee chair. Let's welcome Jill.
Thank you. The title of this talk is Reflections on the Day, Tragedy Again. I thought it would make sense to talk about a little bit about some of the events that have been happening over the last week and over the last many months and many years. I don't think that I'm really particularly qualified to have a lot to say about this, but I did find some poetry that I think is really important. It offers us a bit of history. It offers us some lessons. Maybe helps us understand other people a little better, and maybe it gives us a little bit of hope for the future. I've told you a little bit of a story before in a talk about this movie where a person was torching billboards. He was a Mexican-American citizen. He was torching billboards, and his son said, "Why are you doing this?" And he said, "They make us small." And I think that's what this discussion is about today, making people small for whatever reason it is that we do that, and how we may figure out how to stop making people small. So here's a poem by Maya Angelou called Caged Bird that was written in 1969. The free bird leaps on the back of the wind and floats downstream till the current ends and dips his wings in the orange sun rays and dares to claim the sky. But a bird that stalks down his narrow cage can seldom see through his bars of rage. His wings are clipped and his feet are tied, so he opens his throat to sing. The caged bird sings with fearful trill of the things unknown but longed for still, and his tune is heard on the distant hill, for the caged bird sings of freedom. The free bird thinks of another breeze and the trade winds soft through the sighing trees, and the fat worms waiting on the dawn-bright lawn, and he names the sky his own. But a caged bird stands on the grave of dreams, his shadow shouts on a nightmare scream. His wings are clipped and his feet are tied, so he opens his throat to sing. The caged bird sings with a fearful trill of things unknown but longed for still, and his tune is heard on the distant hill, for the caged bird sings of freedom. Progress. We make it all the time in technology and understanding of science and the conveniences of life, but I wonder if we make progress on this issue of race. Is this caged bird metaphor still true for us in the United States in 2015? Every time we have a tragedy that's based on race, I wonder, will we learn? When will we learn? Can't we do better? Can't we be better? I want to read you some poetry and tell you a little bit about some African-American authors who wrote about this issue. Nikki Giovanni is one of the best-known African-American poets who reached prominence during the late 60s and early 70s. She was born in Knoxville, Tennessee. Giovanni's poetry expresses strong racial pride and respect for family. A frequent lecturer and reader, Giovanni has taught at Rutgers University, Ohio State, and Virginia Tech. This poem is called We Too. It's her reflection on the March on Washington 50 years later. She writes, "I was home in Lincoln Heights, named for Abraham, as many other black communities are. Only 20 years old, not cowardly, I had picketed Rich's department store in Knoxville. I sat in with Fisk University in Nashville, but not all that brave. Mommy didn't want me to go, neither did my father, and I wondered, would it matter? 50 years later, I know it did. We watched, we prayed, we too were inspired. I didn't go, I stayed home and reminded myself, we also serve who sit and wait." Gwendolyn Brooks was a highly regarded, much honored poet with the distinction of being the first African-American author to win the Pulitzer Prize. She also was poetry consultant to the Library of Congress, the first black woman to hold that position. Many of Brooks' works display a political consciousness, especially those from the 60s and later, with several of her poems reflecting the civil rights activism of that period. Listen to just a portion of The Ballad of Rudolph Reed. It's about an African-American family who moved to a white neighborhood in the 1950s-60s era. The result was violence and ultimately death. Rudolph Reed was Oaken. His wife was Oaken too. And his two good girls and his little good man Oakened as they grew. I'm not hungry for berries. I am not hungry for bread. But hungry, hungry for a house where at night a man is in bed. Oh, my home may have its east or west or north or south behind it. All I know is I shall know it and fight for it when I find it. The agent's steep and steady stare corroded to a grin. Why, you black, old, tough, old hell of a man, move your family in. Nary a grin, grinned Rudolph Reed, nary a curse, cursed he, but moved in his house with his little wife and his little children three. A neighbor would look with a yawning eye that squeezed into a slit, but the Rudolph Reeds and children three were too joyous to notice it. For were they not firm in a home of their own with windows everywhere and a beautiful banistered stair and a front yard for flowers and a back for grass? The first night a rock big as two fists, the second a rock big as three, but nary a curse cursed Rudolph Reed. The third night a silvery ring of glass, patience arched to endure, but he looked and lo, small Mabel's blood was stained, her gaze so pure. Then did rise our Rudolph Reed and pressed the hand of his wife and went to the door with a 34 and a beastly butcher knife. I won't read the rest, but the poem ends in tragedy for Rudolph Reed. Margaret Walker won the Yale Series of Younger Poets Award in 1942 for My People. She became one of the youngest black writers ever to have published a volume of poetry in the 20th century, as well as the first black woman in American history to be so honored in a prestigious national competition, noted Richard Barksdale in Black American Poets Between the Worlds, 1940 to 1960. Walker's first novel, Jubilee, is notable for being the first truly historical black American novel, reported Washington Post contributor Crispin Campbell. It was also the first work by a black writer to speak out for the liberation of black women. Here is a poem written by Walker called For My People. It was written in 1937. For my people everywhere singing their slave songs repeatedly, their dirges and their ditties and their blues and their jubilees, praying their prayers nightly to an unknown God, bending their knees humbly to an unseen power. For my people, lending their strength to the years, to the gone years and the now years and the maybe years, washing, ironing, cooking, scrubbing, sewing, mending, hoeing, plowing, digging, planting, pruning, patching, dragging, alone, never gaining, never reaping, never knowing, never understanding. For my playmates in the day and dust and sand of Alabama backyards, playing baptizing and preaching and doctor and jail and soldier and school and mama and cooking and playhouse and concert and store and hair and Miss Chuby and company. For the cramped, bewildered years we went to school to learn, to know the reasons why and the answers to and the people who and the places where and the days when, in memory of the bitter hours when we discovered we were black and poor and small and different and nobody cared and nobody wondered and nobody understood. For the boys and girls who grew in spite of these things to be man and woman, to laugh and dance and sing and play and drink their wine and religion and success, to marry their playmates and bear children and then to have consumption and anemia and lynching. For my people thronging 47th Street in Chicago and Lenox Avenue in New York and Rampart Street in New Orleans, lost, disinherited, dispossessed, and happy people filling the cabarets and taverns and other people's pockets and needing bread and shoes and milk and land and money and something, something all our own. For my people walking blindly, spreading a joy, losing time, being lazy, sleeping when hungry, shouting when burdened, drinking when hopeless, tied and shackled and tangled among ourselves by the unseen creatures who tower over us omnisciently and laugh. For my people, blundering and groping and floundering in the dark of churches and schools and clubs and societies, associations and councils and committees and conventions, distressed and disturbed and deceived and devoured by money-hungry, glory-craving leeches, preyed on by facile force of state and fad and novelty, by false prophet and holy believer. For my people, standing, staring, trying to fashion a better way, from confusion, from hypocrisy and misunderstanding, trying to fashion a world that will hold all the people, all the faces, all the Adams and Eves and their countless generations. Let a new earth rise. Let another world be born. Let a bloody peace be written in the sky. Let a second generation full of courage issue forth. Let a people loving freedom come to growth. Let a beauty full of healing and a strength of final clinching be the pulsing in our spirits and our blood. Let the martial songs be written. Let the dirges disappear. Let a race of men now rise and take control. Margaret Walker, 1937. Paul Lawrence Dunbar was one of the first influential African-American poets in American literature. He enjoyed his greatest popularity in the early 20th century following the publication of dialectic verse in collections such as Majors and Minors and Lyrics of Lowly Life. Dunbar's literary work has been acclaimed as an impressive representation of Black life in turn of the 20th century America. This poem was written in 1896. It's called We Wear a Mask. We wear the mask that grins and lies. It hides our cheeks and shades our eyes. This debt we pay to human guile. With torn and bleeding hearts we smile and mouth with myriad subtleties. Why should the world be overwise in counting all our tears and sighs? Nay, let them only see us while we wear the mask. We smile, O great Christ, our cries to thee from tortured souls arise. We sing, but oh, the clay is vile beneath our feet and long the mile. But let the world dream otherwise. We wear the mask. Langston Hughes was first recognized as an important literary figure during the 1920s. This was a period known as the Harlem Renaissance because of the number of emerging African-American writers. Du Bois Hayward wrote in the New York Herald Tribune in 1926. He said, "Always intense, subjective, passionate, keenly sensitive to beauty, and possessed of an unfaltering musical sense, Langston Hughes has given us a first book that marks the opening of a career well worth watching." Listen to Hughes' poem, Let America Be America Again. Let America be America again. Let it be the dream it used to be. Let it be the pioneer on the plain seeking a home where he himself is free. America never was America to me. Let America be the dream the dreamers dreamed. Let it be that great, strong land of love where never kings connive nor tyrants scheme, that any man be crushed by one above. It never was America to me. Oh, let my land be a land where liberty is crowned with no false patriotic wealth, but opportunity is real and life is free. Equality is in the air we breathe. There's never been equality for me, nor freedom in this homeland of the free. Say, who are you that mumbles in the dark? And who are you that drives your veil across the stars? I am the poor white, fooled and pushed apart. I am the Negro bearing slavery scars. I am the red man driven from the land. I am the immigrant clutching the hope I seek and finding only the same old stupid plan of dog eat dog, of mighty crush the weak. I am the young man full of strength and hope, tangled in that ancient, endless chain of profit, power, gain, of grab the land, of grab the gold, of grab the ways of satisfying need, of work the men, of take the pay, of owning everything for one's own greed. I am the farmer, the bondsman to the soil. I am the worker sold to the machine. I am the Negro servant to you all. I am the people, humble, hungry, mean, hungry, yet today, despite the dream. Beaten yet, O pioneers, I am the man who never got ahead, the poorest worker bartered through the years. Yet I'm the one who dreamt our basic dream in the old world while still a serf to kings, who dreamt a dream so strong, so brave, so true, that even yet its mighty daring sings in every brick and stone, in every furrow turned that's made America the land it has become. Oh, I'm the man who sailed those early seas in search of what I meant to be my home. For I'm the one who left dark Ireland's shore and Poland's plain and England's grassy lay. And torn from black Africa's strand, I came to build a homeland of the free. The free? Who said the free? Not me. Surely not me. The millions on relief today? The millions shot down when we strike? The millions who have nothing for our pay? For all the dreams we've dreamed and all the songs we've sung and all the hopes we've held and all the flags we've hung, the millions who have nothing for our pay except the dream that's almost dead today. Oh, let America be America again, the land that never has been yet, and yet must be the land where every man is free, the land that's mine, the poor man's, Indians, Negroes, me, who made America, whose sweat and blood, whose faith and pain, whose hand at the foundry, whose plow in the rain, must bring back our mighty dream again. Sure, call me any ugly name you choose, the steel of freedom does not stain. From those who live like leeches on the people's lives, we must take back our land again, America. Oh yes, I say it plain, America never was America to me. And yet I swear this oath, America will be. Out of the rack and ruin of our gangster death, the rape and rot of graft and stealth and lies, we the people must redeem the land, the mines, the plants, the rivers, the mountains, and the endless plain. All the stretch of these great green states, and make America again. Now back to the questions from the beginning. I wonder if we're making progress on this issue of race. Can America be the America spoken of by Langston Hughes? You heard the stories of these poets from the 1900s, from the 20s, from the 40s, from the 60s. It seems that we still hear these types of stories now. And every time we have a tragedy that's based on race, I wonder, will we learn? When will we learn? Can't we do better? Can't we be better? Are we just repeating the cycle over and over and over? What are the issues that keep this country locked in this cycle of violence, this violence about race and ethnic differences? Is it fear or hate, anger, too freely available guns, people living in the past, mental illness, demonizing the other, a callous disregard for people, loss of empathy? How do we do better? How do we be better? Here are some suggestions and thoughts for us from Unitarian Universalists that were made after these recent killings in Charleston, South Carolina. The Reverend Lynn Unger suggests, before we act, we let the waves of feeling pass through us. She said, maybe we could just sit down and cry together first. In the presence of black rage, in the presence of white shame, in the presence of grief and despair, and the overwhelming knowledge that white men with guns just keep killing people, in the devastating remembrance that this is not the first time that a white man with a gun has chosen a place of worship as the most devastating possible place to exact horrific violence. The Reverend Dr. Victoria Weinstein issued a call to action. She said, no hand-wringing and passive prayers to the God who mourns with the slain. Action. Active, committed dismantling of the evil of racism. Anti-racist work is work. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, as Dr. King said. And Weinstein said, I don't guess he meant that that network was a freaking hammock. Work. Kenny Wiley wrote about the isolation of being black in the predominantly white faith tradition of Unitarian Universalism. He said, People have seen my grief and ask how they can help. Of course, it means a lot. But mostly, I want us, people who proclaim belief in equality and justice, to reckon with this. I want us to inconvenience ourselves, for there is nothing convenient about racism. The Reverend Cynthia Landrum drew strength from the words of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. She said, "The shooting in Charleston, South Carolina at the Emmanuel AME Church says something to us in our religious faith too. This shooting doesn't call for us to launch a movement, but to join a movement. This shooting calls for us to be partners, to work in solidarity, to join coalitions to build bridges. These deaths to us that we must work passionately and unrelentingly for love." From Reverend Danny Reed of the Unitarian Church of Charleston, he said, "As you gather in worship services yourselves, remember those killed and their families." Reverend Sharonda Coleman Singleton, Cynthia Hurd, Susie Jackson, Ethel Lance, Reverend DePayne Middleton Doctor, Reverend Clementa Pinckney, Tawanza Sanders, Reverend Daniel Simmons, and Myra Thompson. "Remember too," he said, "those survivors wounded in the attack and recovering." Reverend Reed said, "We will never be the same. Charleston will bear the scars of the assault on Mother Emmanuel Church, yet we will not be defeated. The work of justice is never ending, and commitment to the beloved community is ever needed. Even in the haunted American South, love will prevail." I have another poem from Maya Angelou to close our service. Maya Angelou was born Marguerite Johnson. She spent her early years in St. Louis and also in a tiny town called Stamps, Arkansas, and also in San Francisco. She became a national celebrity in 1970 with her publication of I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, the first volume of her autobiography. On January 20th, 1993, Angelou read her poem On the Pulse of Morning during the inauguration of President Bill Clinton. Here's a portion of her inaugural poem. "Lift up your eyes upon this day breaking for you. Give birth again to the dream. Women, children, men, take it into the palms of your hands. Mold it into the shape of your most private need. Sculpt it into the image of your most public self. Lift up your hearts. Each new hour holds new chances for a new beginning. Do not be wedded forever to fear, yoked eternally to brutishness. The horizon leans forward, offering you space to place new steps of change. Here, on the pulse of this fine day, you may have the courage to look up and out and upon me, the rock, the river, the tree, your country. Here, on the pulse of this new day, you may have the grace to look up and out and into your sister's eyes and into your brother's face, your country, and say simply, very simply, with hope, good morning."